Blog Talk Radio.
Warning, warning.
Attention all cupcakes, lollipops, and landlubbers. This is your captain speaking. The battle for truth and justice is before us. Batten down the hatches and prepare to blast off into Deep Space Nine.
Warning, warning.
For this two-hour pleasure cruise, where we are dedicated to the fight and the preservation of freedom, regardless of that cost. We don't give a damn about the cost. This is our freedom. Look, freedom ain't cheap, I'll give you that, but we can afford it. It's tyranny that we cannot afford. All right, you want to be a part of the program tonight, 646-716-7978, or you can join the captain's chat room. Now, you know, if you've listened to this show, I'm horrible with the chat room. But I do make an effort to look in the chat room from time to time. Okay? The chat room is for you. Okay? I'm busy speaking. I can't be on the chat room chatting when I'm speaking. It doesn't make any sense. I don't do that. The chat room is for you people. But I will take a look from time to time. Now, remember, if you do have a story out there where you have been tyrannized in any way, and I don't care by who, it doesn't matter to me, doctors, lawyers, judges, cops, Walmart greeters, who gives a damn? If you've been tyrannized, you've been tyrannized. That's the point. You got a story, you got to get it out there. Well, here's the perfect place. All you got to do, get on Facebook, type in the captain. Shows up news personality. You give me a little message, captain, I've been tyrannized. I got to get my story out. Well, you climb aboard, you get your story out. It's that simple. Now, tonight, my very special guest is Freddy Verzoza. We don't see him on the queue here yet. So I'm hoping that he shows up because I really want to hear this story. Because if there's anything that we need right now, it is a happy story. With everything that's been going on the past week, we definitely 100% need a happy story. Well, he does have a happy story. He does have a happy story. And we need to hear from him. So, Freddie, give us a call. Now, Freddie, if you've listened here, you've heard Freddie on here before. He is a longtime caller. He's been a guest on here a number of times. Well, he's going to be on board here tonight, discuss the story of how his seven children were removed for erroneous reasons because they were poor. Yeah, that's right. And his wife, well, she's just not very smart. Okay. Well, look at 90% of the people on television. They're not very smart. Did they have their children removed? No. Hell, look at our government. God Almighty, 99% of those idiots, they don't have their children removed. Just because you're poor means you got to have your children removed? No. The man was a loving father. His mother was a loving mother. The whole family was loving. Whatever happened to love? Why is love such a bad thing today? I don't know. But it seems to be. Well, he never gave up. He never gave up the fight. He kept fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting. And he finally prevailed. And that's what it takes. You can't give up. I don't care what it is in this world. When there's a fight to fight, you have to fight it. You can't give up. If you give up, guess what happens? You lose. What happens when you lose? Well, you lose not only the fight, but you lose your life, your way of life. You lose everything about you. You lose what you have not only on the outside, but you lose what you have on the inside. Don't ever lose what you have on the inside. That's your strength. What you have right in here, that is your strength. That is your strength. Don't ever lose that. Well, you need to understand that this can happen to anyone. Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled to think that, well, it won't happen to me. Oh, this can't happen to me. Oh, no. Yeah, it can. The very moment you think it can't happen to you is the very moment that it will happen to you. So don't ever think that. All right, looks like we've got Freddie on board here. So I want everybody to give a very big nautical welcome to our very, very special guest, Mr. Freddie Vergoza. Freddie, my good friend, welcome aboard. I'm so glad to have you.
Hey, how you doing, Captain? Good evening, everybody.
Well, you know what, Freddie? You are actually, this story is a breath of fresh air. When I got the message from Terry a couple of days ago, and it was right after all of this nonsense that's going on in Charlottesville and all the hate and everybody tearing statues down and fighting with each other and all this crap. I was so bummed, and I've been bummed all freaking week. I really have. I've been bummed because this stuff is not America. This is not who we are. We should not be going down this road, but we're here, and it's very depressing. It really is. And when I got the news that, you know, you got your children back, and then I get another piece of good news that the Remus family, they got reunited as well. So, I mean, we got a double whammy here. So, Freddie, I just want to let the audience know here real quick, because maybe they may not know your story. So let's get up to speed here. Just tell the audience, you know, a little bit of, you know, what happened, you know, to your family. How did it happen? And then we'll get into, you know, your fight and how you got your children back. So you got the floor, my friend.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to thank you again, Captain, for inviting me back to your show. It's been a while, and missed talking to you and everyone else that's listening. This man has just been incredible. He's helped us out in many ways. He's been a very good supporter. I just want to also thank my mother-in-law who's listening, who's been also a very good supporter. Her name is Becky. I know she's just listening, so she's probably smiling up the storm right now. So, but it all started about 3 years ago, and it's the most craziest thing that people never thought it would happen, because we ourselves, about 4 years ago when we first came to Florida, had witnessed all these children being pulled away from the hotel. And apparently somebody had come up and said, well, why are you picking on us? What about the people downstairs? And that's how the DCF started investigating us. And they didn't
know.
Wait a minute.
I didn't know that part. So, okay. So at this point, you were living in a hotel, and the CPS or DCF, I think it's DCF in Florida.
DCF over here. Yes, sir.
Right. Yeah. CPS, DCF is the same. It's the same thing.
They're all the same. They're all child kidnappers.
These people were being attacked, and then they said, "Well, why are you attacking me? Why don't you go attack them?" And that's when they.
Maybe my guts are gone, but I've mentioned that before, and that's how they ran into us, because somebody had told them that there's a family of six at the time. Down below them, and it's like, so they started an investigation, but we moved out of the hotel because I didn't really, you know, I'm out for success, and I promised my family that I would get them out of there as quick as possible. So we found this house. When we found this house, they closed the case. Well, you know, when you first move into the house, you have all these bills, and I was barely working. My wife was collecting her disability check, and my son, and that was barely getting us by. So they said, if you ever need help, just call us up. You know, I said, well, I don't want another case being open. I said, no, it's not going to be open. Well, they lied to me, because as soon as I called them for help, because my light was turned up, and that's when the whole nightmare began, just because I asked for help. So I learned that
so many times with all of the guests that I have I've ever had on here, they all tell me the same thing, that when they go for help, that's
right.
when they get attacked. Now, CPS is there to help. Isn't that why they're supposed to be there, DCF, whatever the hell you are? That's what they're
You're
there
right.
to help. They're not there to hurt. They're there to help. I can't tell you how many guests have said the same thing. We went there to help. All we wanted was to
right.
help. And
right.
I just can't understand this. I don't understand. I do not understand what they're doing. And they have very evil tendencies.
They have too much authority.
They've
been given too much authority, you know. So, I mean,
right.
they abuse that authority. And to kind of move in forward, so 8 months, well, shortly after I was in the hotel for 8 months, and a few months after that, I think it was in January of 2014, we moved into this house. It needed some work. I fixed it up, made some deals with the landlord, and we finally got stuff a house. So and then they turned around after they reopened the case, and they said, well, that house is not safe. I was leaving my wife too long by herself with all these children. I mean, you know, six children's time, and the kids were caught outside, which they practically made up a whole bunch of lies. And so that's
yeah, but see, that right there,
them.
But, you know, kids being outside, look – when I was
well, the
a kid,
thing
we
is,
were
they said the kids
outside.
Were outside. They said the kids were outside unattended, and everybody, my neighbor, we'll go to court, and we'll testify that my kids never go outside without their parents. My kids have known better than that, and they said that they were out there jumping in the pool, throwing toys in there, and it's like, you know, they come in and wait till I leave, so my wife's by herself, so. She would be overwhelmed with trying to talk to them. They'll come in there and ask her questions and everything. And then they said, my wife is mute. And there's a lot of people that have spoken and spoken to my wife, and she's not mute. It's just that she don't talk to anybody, but she doesn't know that she doesn't feel comfortable. I'm the same way. I talk a lot, but there's a lot of times if I don't like the person or if the person is giving me some bad vibes, I won't even take the time to entertain that, you know. So,
right.
But to move on a little bit more further, it's been 3 years. You know, 3 years seems like 10 years to me, because it
sure.
seems like it was almost forever. The kids were young and little, and now they're grown. I've got a daughter that's 12 years old. That's almost like an inch taller than me. Not a week, she's gonna be taller than me, and she's gonna be like looking down on me. So. That's how much the kids have grown. I mean, there's so many changes, you know, so many changes that have happened. And, you know, so right now as we speak, we're just making some adjustments. And, you know, God's been really good to us, because last Friday we moved into a new home. There's a gentleman that we had ran into, and I think he fell from the sky. And basically this guy here just had given us everything that we needed. The court needed us to have a home, a job, and a car. And this guy made it happen in less than 48 hours.
Right.
You know, so he was a total blessing. Even the judge says, you guys, I commend you guys. You guys are totally blessed with this man's help. So that's when the judge decided to go ahead and release the children last Friday. The same day we're moving into a new home. So to me, it's like a whole new beginning. And it's a big change.
Well, you know what?
I mean,
you know what? That's where the real help comes. It doesn't come from the government. Real help comes from each other. It comes from your neighbor. It comes from your family. It comes from your friends. It comes from us. It doesn't come from the guy. If you're going to expect the government to help you, you're not going to get the help. You got to get the help.
They'll help you, but you'll be owning for the rest of your life.
They're going to help themselves. They'll help themselves, and they're going to use you to help themselves, and that's wrong. But
The thing is too, Captain, is that they were supposed to help us find a home. And they kept saying that they were looking for. They said they found a home and everything, but. Right. At the same time, we were like waiting for that home, and luckily, I left the county, which I almost got in trouble for that, for not letting them know ahead of time. But it was a wise decision that I made, because I got introduced to this guy, and he gave me an opportunity, and I grabbed it, took a chance on it, and this is what happens. But if I would have stayed where I was at, I sure would have. I know for the fact that I would have lost my children, because I wasn't getting anywhere. I blew my car, on the last week. So,
what really breaks my heart when I first heard your story, was when your newborn, your seventh child. I think that was your daughter, right?
Right. Yes, it's Taylor.
Basically, breastfeeding, and was removed 2 days old. That I find. I find completely heartless. I find that evil. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how to put that in words. I don't even know how to put that kind of evil in words. I don't know how to do it. I could not personally do that myself.
Right.
I could not do that. But a lot of you parents out there, and especially you, Freddie, for everything that has happened to you, how you people keep your composure and keep fighting. See, I know me, and I would have lost everything. I would have lost my mind. I would have been in jail because that's me. You take my children.
Right.
I mean, that's – you know what I mean? I mean, those are fighting words. You know what I'm saying? But that's me. But, you parents, I gotta tip my hat. And you're doing it right is what you're doing. You're doing it right, and you're fighting right. So I got to – you're a better man than me, Freddie, and I got to – I'll say that right here, right now. I always say that. You are much better man.
Let me touch up that a little bit. Let me bring you back a little bit. I think I've shared this with you before of how they took them now. You were talking about being a better man. I was almost not going to be a better man. The only thing that kept me from changing and keeping myself in calm is because I made a promise to my children that no matter what, I'm going to fight for you. I try to keep calm because if I know for the fact that if I would have done it my way, I know I would have either gotten shot or I would have gone to jail. I would have done exactly what you done, because it was ridiculous for them to handcuff me in front of my house, two houses down away from my house. I couldn't even give my kids a proper hug. I couldn't even say goodbye to them.
Why did they have to handcuff you?
Because they thought I was dangerous, that I was going to go out there. Because I got a little mouthy with the caseworker, and I told them. They said, because you didn't want to cooperate with us. Then the cop overreacted, and I said, I just raised my voice, and then all of a sudden he twisted my arm and kept cuffed me, and he was getting ready to taser me. So I told him, and then that's when my daughter ran out and locked herself in the closet. But they pretty much tore up my house, and just to pick up the kids. I mean, there was unnecessary. I think they're watching too many drug bust movies or something. It was crazy that they would have to come in there.
My point. When I listen to this cockamamie sheriff there in Charlottesville, I mean, I about went out of my skin. He's talking about, all of his deputies, they're watching the statue being torn down, and you got the deputies there videotaping all of this violence, and they're not engaging. And the sheriff is, trying to defend this. And I'm thinking to myself, now, wait a minute. He said, we were outnumbered. I'm thinking to myself, whoa, wait a minute. You're outnumbered? Wait a minute. You can't call for backup? I mean, when you come and you steal a children from a home, what's the first thing you do? You call in a SWAT team. I can't tell you how many SWAT teams have showed up to remove children from homes. So don't sit here and tell me this. And the cops had guns. These people didn't have guns. So don't give me this cowardly excuse that you could not engage these people from tearing down these statues. And the cops are videotaping it? I mean, I don't buy it, Freddie. I don't buy it.
No, I totally agree with you.
I just absolutely don't buy
that. Yeah, I mean, same thing
with
my kids. My kids didn't have no guns on them, so why come in there with guns? I mean, it scares the crap out of these kids.
And,
I mean, now,
and you didn't have any guns, and now how are you really a threat to society when you're trying to protect your family? That's your job as a parent. Now, you know, I mean, people get pulled over from the cops. They say, give me your, let's see your ID. So you reach in your pocket to get an ID, and you get about 6 bullets in your chest. So don't give me this crap. I don't want to hear it. I'm sorry. I'm not anti-cop. I'm just anti-bad cop. I'm anti-bad. That's what I am. I'm just anti-bad. I don't care where it comes from. A cop, a judge, a citizen, a politician, a Walmart greeter. I don't care. If it's bad, it's bad. Bad is bad. Good is good. It doesn't matter where it comes from. Just because you've got a certain title doesn't automatically make you good or bad. So,
exactly.
I mean, you know, I just, you know, Freddie, we do have a caller on board here. I'd like to bring him on. He is a longtime caller, just like you. He has his own show. He's got his own blog. He is Christopher Bruce, the Living Man. The Living Man, welcome aboard. Glad to have you.
Welcome aboard. Well, I guess you're already aboard. Never mind. I'm sorry. Let me back off. You're already there. Hi, Ken. What's going on, buddy?
Well, we've got a good success story here tonight. We got Freddie Verzoza, who finally, after 3 years, got all of his children back. Now, how about that?
Oh,
and he fought his butt off.
Well, I've got to say, from what I've heard so far, I didn't fight nearly as hard, and I wish I'd have fought harder. But, of course, you got to remember a year of that I was in jail, so that kind of
you fought a good fight. You fought a good fight. You fought.
Well, I'm not done fighting yet either, so I've got a year to make up for, so maybe I'll be in the same place after a year of this, so we'll see.
Freddie, I want to ask you something. I know, you know, it may be kind of personal, but it's been 3 years, and you never really got a lot of FaceTime with your children in those 3 years.
A lot of missing visitation, too.
Right. And I know they're happy to see, but how is it really going? And have you noticed any changes in your children? Have you noticed?
I mean, it's countless. I mean, it's, you know, it's out of control. I mean, it's it's not gonna happen overnight. I don't even really see it happening in the next couple of months, or not even 6 months from now. It's gonna take a lot of time. It's gonna need a lot of more deeper bonding, family time to kind of replace their memories. And you know, so they've been away from us 3 years, so they lost their ways of how it used to be at. So now
they're
adopted to the other ways.
I got to miss that detail. How old are your children?
Mine ranges from 2 years old to 12 years old.
Oh, okay. So they were older. Yeah, okay,
they're a little older now, but you got to remember our seventh child wasn't even born yet. And all of them are like 3 years younger back then. So,
there was like nine. Was your oldest was 9? Are they resentful to you at all because of this? Are they showing any of that?
No, I don't think it's resentful. I think it's more like there's questionable doubts because the other ones. There was some that come back to us and says that they were told that the reason that they was taken just because we didn't care about them, we didn't love them, and things like
that.
So,
oh God,
you know,
every time I hear
when
parents say that, that just makes me just violently ill when I hear this. And I've heard that a million times, that CPS,
right,
they tell the children, you don't tell the children that you just take from their family, that their parents don't love them anymore, they don't care for them, that they don't want them. You don't say that,
right,
even if it's true.
No.
Even if it's true, you don't say that to them. I don't know how you could be,
right,
that evil to say that to a child. I don't know how to do it. I wouldn't even say that to an adult, much less a child. Oh my God.
Right.
So,
but there's a lot of there's going to be some changes, and you know, it's like I said, we're kind of gradually not forcing it overnight. So we're just kind of,
right,
trying to be patient, and you know, there's a lot of angers and you know, it's not so much regrets, but it's gonna take a little time. So, but you know, they're just glad to be together for once, and no more visitation. It's just gonna be 24/7 family time now. So,
are you completely done with DCF? I mean, do you have to show
up
for any kind of meeting?
I still. Well, I got another court hearing back in January for judicial review, but you know, they're going to be in our lives for the next 6 months. So I think 6 months will fly by in no problem.
Well, 3 years wasn't enough. Huh? They had to keep on going.
So if I can handle 3 years, I can handle 6 months. So as long as my children are with me, it'd be different, you know. So because I mean, there's nobody can actually recognize, or not so much recognize, but there's a lot of things that has not been said that had happened in those 3 years. I mean, the nightmares we went through, the lost time of visitations, you know, there's so many things that happened in between those 3 years. I mean, a lot. It seems, like I said, it seems like it was 10 years ago, because these kids have changed. I mean, they're more mature and grown up now. And like I said, most of my two oldest ones are just as tall as I am, and it's like I feel like, you know, just they're gonna outgrow me, you know. So it's just like I said, it's gonna take a little time. It's not gonna be easy. It's gonna take a lot of patience.
Your youngest, how is she responding? She's got to be really confused, because she was taken when she was born, and now she's three. She's got to be really confused, right?
Well, no, she's adopted. Believe it or not, she's adopting towards us quite a bit, you know. So,
Three years isn't too bad for a newborn, because she may be a little confused, you know, on a light note. I mean, if she was three when she got taken, that'd be another thing altogether. But newborn to a 3 year old is probably not going to lose a whole lot of sleep over a change.
Yeah.
Well, at least not that you can notice anyway.
But were your children, were they all together in foster care, or were they separated?
No, at first there was like, I think, four or five foster parents that they were separated into, and then they adopted down to three, and then down to two, and then the last four came into one. So
see, that's another thing,
you know,
that I just cannot stomach. You don't separate siblings. I'm sorry. You just don't do it. I don't care if it's
even the judge
two.
Said that too. They don't want to separate different foster parents. So,
I mean, that's your blood. You can't separate siblings. I don't care. I don't care if it's two or seven, eight, nine, ten. You don't do that.
One of mine was like was I think he got let's see, one, two. I think three different foster parents in the last 3 years. And then at one time they transferred him to another foster parents, and we didn't see him for a whole month. And they couldn't even track him down. And it took almost a month for us to find out where he was wanted yet. So, That's the one that was circumcised at the age of 8. He's 10 now, going to be 11 in a couple months here. So
circumcised now, at 8?
At 8.
Oh my.
Yeah, it's
a little late.
It's got to be. Yeah,
well, you know, we had guys that were in the Navy that got it. That weren't circumcised. Yeah, and yeah, they'd come out, and yeah, we were in pain for a while. Trust me. But Christopher, now you have been fighting now. This is, you're going on what, 4 or 5 years now? How long have you been fighting?
This will be where we just passed 3 years. Ours was taken at 9 days old. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's been 3 years.
Mine was 2 days old, our last one. And actually, I delivered that baby. And let me touch up that subject a little bit. When she was born, my wife had her so quickly that I ended up delivering her in my house. So I called for an assistant, the paramedic, but then when we went to court after they took her 2 days later, they said I was trying to hide her, and everybody was just confused. They said, how can he be hiding when he's the one who called the paramedic?
And she's in the hospital. How can you be hiding?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's crap.
That's crazy. Well, I got to tell you, I mean, everybody knows my story, but I got to tell you that my baby was perfectly healthy. There was absolutely nothing wrong with her. She was very well fed. The complaint was that we weren't feeding her at all and that we weren't taking care of her and so on. And she was perfectly healthy. She weighed more than she did at birth at 9 days old. So, you know, we were feeding her. And we were taking very good care of her. She was well fed. She was perfect health. Three sets of doctors looked at her and all said she was in perfect health, and yet they took her. So it's for neglect.
Well, my sixth child, he was a boy, and he was born with heart murmur. And the doctor said, just do a follow-up. And, of course, we live in a hotel, and we didn't have a car. We didn't hardly know anybody to call. And so we missed that appointment, and it took us, that's one of the accusations. They said it took us 8 months to get him a follow-up. And I said, well, the doctor said it was, I would have known better if I see any kind of changes on him I feel that it's an emergency, I would have ran him to the emergency room. But there wasn't. He was as healthy as can be. So 8 months later, we went out and had them, when they opened up the case, we had them checked out. And the doctor said he's healthy as a bull, no need to follow up. They took that the document saying that he was fine, there was nothing wrong with him, he's healthy. So even though they had that document, they still turned around and took all these kids, including himself. So now that they have taken him, now he's got eczema, he's got all kinds of health issues. You know, unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
perfect.
None of these kids have ever been in a hospital.
They're not very healthy.
Right.
Wow.
None of these kids have ever been in a hospital. My wife's taking good care of them when it's under her care.
Freddie, I got to tell you something. We were in a hotel, too. Isn't that funny? And I got to tell you that when we got our kid taken, we'd been in that hotel for a year and a half. And they tried to tell us that we were living in unstable housing. And I don't know whether they get this unstable housing because you're living in a motel. And I'm like, this is like an apartment. I've been living here for a year and a half. I paid my rent on time every month. How is this? I paid a deposit even. So how is this unstable housing?
Look, there are a lot of very rich people that live into hotels in New York City. You're living in a hotel or you're living in an apartment. What is the difference? It's still stable.
Well,
the hotel's not going anywhere.
I've asked them this question. You know what their answer to that is? Their answer is that we can be immediately put out of a hotel if we don't pay our rent. Whereas
you can do that with
an apartment.
You can do that with your own
in
home.
In an apartment, it takes them 30 days to put you out legally. So that's why they consider it unstable. I don't get that either, Ken. But, yeah, okay, go ahead.
I mean, Yeah, I mean, you just can't make this kind of craziness up. Yeah, I mean, you just can't. You can't do it.
No.
Well, at one time we went to court, the guardian Milano kept saying that they wanted to put the kids up for adoption. And they said because we had unstable housing and income. So the judge said, well, this man has been.
According to them, unstable, according to the law. Now, this is not me saying this. This is them saying this. According to the law, unstable housing, homelessness, in other words, is not a reason to remove and adopt out your children.
Yeah.
So
that's where I was going to get to next. Is the judge says this man has been living in his house for 3 years. So I don't see what you guys' definition as far as stable housing, because this man is living 3 years. Unstable income, you have to be able to pay the rent. You know, I'm not going to lie. I've missed a couple of rents because my customer never paid me on time. So I've missed out a couple of days and maybe a whole month, but I managed to catch up. So the judge says, just because their life gets cut off, it doesn't mean it's not a crime. And I'll repeat this. It's not a crime to be poverty. She said that many times.
Thank you. Agreed. Yeah, it's not. And the judges will say that. The judges will say that on purpose. Not my judge, mind you. My judge was crooked as hell. But neither here nor there, judges have said this is not a reason, just because they're below the poverty level, is not a reason to remove children. In other words, why do you pay me? You should be helping them. There's the other thing about our case. We had applied for welfare because we were in a situation at that time where we were a little bit below poverty level and we couldn't afford another member in our family without a little help. We asked for help. If you had given us the help instead of taking our children, maybe you wouldn't have a reason to keep them.
Right.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing with this whole poverty. Now, you've got all of these multi-wealthy people who have these children that never pay attention to them. They've got nannies. They've got this. They've got that. They don't pay attention to them. They're off doing their little careers and going off on their little vacations, and their children are left alone. They don't even know who their parents are, and they have zero love. Now you've got a poor family, and the overwhelming vast majority of poor families, I think this is a fair number. I don't know the exact number, but I think I'm pretty close, that the overwhelming vast majority of poor families are going to have a hell of a lot more love than you are in a rich family. Now, what is more important, money or love? I'm going to go ahead with love. But I'll take love any day.
Well, we're going to say love, of course. But let me tell you something, Ken. I don't know if you remember everything, but I'm going to tell you that the person that got our child was the father, the biological father, who had sex with my wife once when we were separated and just basically left her, okay, and didn't want anything to do with her, all right? This man was the person that got our child, and the very first question they asked him in the courtroom was, where do you work and how much money do you make? They didn't care about whether this is the best person for this child. They didn't care about any of that. What they cared about was, how much money do you make? That was the second question they asked. That's not a joke. Where do you work?
No.
How much money do you make? These were the first two questions out of the judge's mouth.
Now, your wife hasn't been able to see, or you haven't. You haven't been able to see your baby.
Since she was 2 months old. No, we haven't seen her at all. Our rights were terminated 6 months, Ken.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean.
And how long you haven't seen him?
It's because we fought them. We didn't want to play their game. We didn't want to play the, you have to go get mental evaluations and treatment. And they wanted us to go have drug evaluations and treatment. They didn't say, have a drug evaluation. If you need treatment, go get treatment. They said, you're going to have drug evaluation and treatment. Whether we needed the treatment or not didn't matter. We were supposed to get it. Same with the mental evaluation.
See, that's another thing. You know, that's another thing. They just use this as an excuse, and they make more money because every time they send you to a psychiatrist or a drug counselor or this or that, you got to go to this test and that test, they're making more money. Where did they get the money from? Well, that comes from you. You, the taxpayer. Yeah, yeah.
I paid
them
to do that to me. I did.
And you,
I did. I
most of the overwhelming vast majority of these parents are not on drugs, but yet they make them go through drug treatment programs. That doesn't even make sense to me because they're making money.
The judge didn't say go to mental evaluation, and if you need treatment, get treatment. What they said was you have to follow their assessment. You have to go to treatment. Excuse me, what if I don't need treatment? Sounds to me like you already know what the answer is going to be, that they're going to require treatment.
Now,
excuse
Freddie, did
me?
They make you Freddie, you had to go through psychological evaluations, and did they make you try to go through drug treatment too? What did they do to you?
Who are you talking to?
Freddie.
Hello?
Yeah, Freddie.
Hello.
Did they make you go through psychological evaluations, and did they make you go through drug treatment programs as well?
Well, before they took the kids, they thought I was doing drugs because that's the reason why we weren't keeping up with our bills. So they gave me a drug test right there in my house, and I passed that. Psychological evaluation, they made us take twice.
Oh, wow. And did they make you do treatment for
that? Because
they
wait a minute, he passed it. We got to keep giving him a test until he fails it. That's probably
yeah. So they turned around. They turned around and the reason – there's a lot of things have happened because now the woman had raised his children from birth on for 9 years now. 9 whole years is now – under restriction. She is not allowed to be alone with the kids for more than 30 minutes to 45 minutes. Unbelievable. This is the woman
that raised
these
children. Well, if you're not allowed to be around
your
child for 30 minutes, you shouldn't be allowed to be around the child at all. I mean,
Here's my battle with them, is that I told them, unless you can prove to me that she's not capable of raising his children, then you have no business putting this restriction.
Right.
Because when she took the psychological evaluation, it was based on her IQ. So now you're going to tell me if your IQ is low, that you're not qualified to be a parent?
Oh, yeah.
Come on, get
yeah,
real.
Get real, exactly.
The same thing happened with mine. She has a low IQ. She has a learning disability, okay? And this is a reason to have to put her through the ringer. I mean, she has to go through mental evaluation and treatment too because she has a learning disability. Excuse me, but she can't add and subtract. This does not make her a bad mother. Okay?
No, parenting is instinct. It has nothing to do with adding and subtracting.
There's a lot of animals on God's green earth that are a lot dumber than me.
Oh,
okay.
My God, Nancy Pelosi, for the love of God.
Stand.
That woman is so stupid. She walks out into the forest and the trees get stupider. And yet she's got children. Are you kidding me? I mean, come on.
Repeat that. I love the way you said that.
It's true. I'm sorry, but I mean, no. Parenting is instinct. It's animal instinct. It has nothing to do with whether you can add or subtract or whether you can read or write. Look, most people in America, even in the 19th century, were illiterate. They couldn't read or write, and they had kids.
And they parented just fine. They raised you just fine, I guarantee it. Yeah, thank you.
God Almighty.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's an insane world we live in, isn't it, Ken? thank you.
Well, you know, all it is an excuse. That's all it is,
oh, yeah.
is an excuse to take the kids so they can make more money. Now, we do have another caller. This is another good friend of mine. He's on my sports show. He calls in quite often. He's also had a little bit of run-in with CPS
fun.
As well. And so let's bring him on. He's Doc. He's a doctor. So let's bring him on.
Oh, wow.
Doc, welcome aboard. Glad to have you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Cap. Thanks for taking the call, as always. Just to make clear, I am not an actual doctor. Just to clarify, I am not a doctor. If anything, I am a seer and speaker of absolute reality. That's the best I got. I kind of call things like I see it. I'm very forward and rational. I've been listening for a little bit, and no, I mean, you both kind of hit the nail on the head as far as, no, this was like a money grab by the government. I mean, honestly, back in the day, you didn't have all these goofy regulations on whether or not you were fit to be a parent. If you were a parent, well, all right, well, if you got a roof over your kids fed, and they're clothed, yeah, okay, you could be dumb in a box of rocks as long as you're taking care of your kid. I mean, that's
right.
All part of being the parent. That's
right,
all
right.
There is to it. So, yeah, now all this little hoops and red tape and everything else you got to jump through now, no, that's all politics that, you know, everybody nowadays is so, I don't know, I need a participation trophy for, oh, I gave birth. Let me give you a trophy. All right. No, maybe they came out wrong. Because, honestly, women that give birth, I give them full props because I have witnessed it. I've helped actually deliver babies before. No, they deserve a freaking trophy for that one. That's a phenomenal feat of nature. But
and Freddie, right, you so, delivered your last child. You delivered it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
congratulations
on that one. It's a horrific
yeah.
sight, isn't it?
Oh,
I'm not gonna lie.
It's a whole new dimension for that one.
So
it's a whole new dimension.
Oh yeah, it gives you a new perspective on everything.
Oh yeah,
when it comes to
you would really appreciate it more. But you know,
oh yeah,
it's just a shame that they try to get us for, you know, out of these 3 years that we've had these children taken away, there still hasn't been no charge on us. But yet it took them this long to actually, yeah, it took them this long to bring these kids back. You know, it's. But now they know I've got a bigger challenge in my hand because now it's you know, getting these kids back into where they should be at, you know. So it's ridiculous. Now the in those 3 years, the nightmare I'm going to share a little bit because I had a good job. I had a beautiful home. The house was like worth $200. I didn't buy it, but I was renting it. It's worth probably $250,000 house, but yet they said it's not a safe home. So I don't know exactly safe is. Just because we didn't have a floor, because I took all the tiles out of it, because it all busted up from the last tenant. So I fixed it up. I had a good job. I was making good money. But then they turned around and they said, well, now you're going to have to start going to these appointments with these kids. So I said, no problem. I'll take care of that. So I had to miss a couple jobs, and the more I missed, and all of a sudden these jobs started going away. So I told him, I said, I can't go to all these appointments. Anytime you want me to go, I have to kind of work it out in my schedule. So
you don't understand. You have got to drop everything to make sure that you go to every single appointment. Or if you miss one appointment, you're a bad parent.
Yeah, that's
what
they're saying.
You
I'm not adjusting to my kids' needs. I said, I know what my kids need. So... But at the same time, I told him, I said, you want me to go to these appointments and then you expect me to keep a job?
No.
The judge finally told him, I said, you can't expect this man to do, I mean, he's the only one that's licensed to drive these kids around. And you know, some of these foster parents, they have the same schedule according to their needs, their what works best for them. But I'm trying
right.
to hold
they
a job and trying to go to these appointments.
For them.
Yeah,
right.
it's more convenient
they don't
for
care
everybody
about your
else.
Schedule.
No, I mean, the department, the DCF, they came up there and made an appointment for us, only to find out it was an hour earlier. So when I went in there and I said, oh, it's already over. That's like an hour ago. I said, so I missed an opportunity to make $3,000 in 1 week because you guys decided to play this game that, oh, we made a mistake because the appointment was supposed to be set an hour earlier.
So, right, and they don't care because
no, because
they're
it's not
part
their
of the
money
government.
Not,
they get
you know,
their they get their check and at the end of the week, and they don't care
whether they work
or not.
They're going to get checks.
They don't have don't have to communicate anything with you.
They can
say, well, we sent you something in the mail. All right. Well, they send you something in the mail. Well, we all know how snail mail works. I mean, they could send it out tomorrow, and you'll get it 2 weeks from now if it gets lost in the mail because you know that's what it is.
No, no, if they make a mistake, they don't want to admit it. But if you make a mistake, you get penalized for it.
Right.
Oh, yeah, right. And that's what I was going to say. If you're set up for a visitation appointment and you're 5 minutes late, then you're not following procedure. But if the parent ends up having to be late for an hour, say, and you've been there for 2 hours waiting for them to get there, that's okay. That's okay.
Oh,
if they can't make the appointment, that's no big deal.
It's all a one-sided thing, whatever suits them the best. Now, the biggest reason why I actually pushed, you know, one to chime in was you were talking about, you know, when you had applied for welfare, this and that. I was listening, and you said you were going through the steps. You were trying to get back on your feet, this net. What I wanted to say was you're not looking for a handout, which is how they were treating you. You're looking for a hand up. That's it. You just needed that little extra boost to help you get on your feet and then take care of yourself. You're not looking to thrive off of that. You just need that.
No,
up.
As a matter of fact, I
just
said
a little boost, just
a month or two.
Yeah, right. It's a temporary situation. Yeah, give me a hand, help me out a little bit. I got it after that. I can get it all squared away. But they treated you like you're doing this in order to live off of it. Like I don't want to sound, you know, stereotypical, this and that. But I'm going to say how most Americans are now that are in those situations.
Okay,
but
I mean, you've got families that have been generations living on welfare.
Right.
So,
again,
you know what I'm saying?
Situation.
I mean,
I'm sorry, Ken, but this is welfare I pay for. I pay for this.
The whole point is,
I need it.
I know, but the whole point
what
is
I was
it
saying
seems very selective
wrong.
Of who gets welfare and who doesn't.
Well,
that's what it seems
and
like.
The thing is, yeah, and I'm sorry if it came out the wrong way, because what I was trying to get across was, at least, Freddie, you're actually being proactive and you're doing something about bettering your situation.
Right.
Whereas where I said stereotypically, most people that are on welfare that have been on it for a while, they depend on it. It's why you see signs in natural parks. Parks that say don't feed the animals. You know, you don't feed the wildlife because they become dependent on that. They can't
survive
and survive on them by themselves. You're being proactive. Yet they still wouldn't give you that hand up. It's not a handout, it's a hand up at that point because you're still being proactive.
Well said.
So that's the main reason why I go ahead and chime in. I'm sorry I had to get that out there. It's very important to me anyway. So
no, it's very well said. You're absolutely correct. But, my point is, you know, you're right. I mean, when you've got families that have lived generations on welfare, and then here you've got this hardworking family who just, like you said, Doc, who just wants a hand up, and, well, they get not a hand up, they get a boot up their ass. That's what they get.
Yeah.
And I hate to excuse my French, but I mean, I'm just telling the truth. Sorry for that, but, you know, you're a hard worker, and Freddie, you're always working. I mean, just because you're not making a lot of money, it doesn't mean that you're not sitting at home playing video games.
Hey, Captain, you want to hear something? One of the times that we were in court, the guardian litem had requested that I need to be making, in order for me to get my kids back, I need to be making at least $10,000 for me to feed my children. $10,000.
Well, thank you very much for telling me what I need to do.
Just tell my employer, you got to pay me more money because, you know, the government says I got to make more money.
If only that's the way it works. If only.
I mean, we were living fine with $1,400 a month. We were surviving on that, but they said, I wasn't working. I was depending on the government check, and I said, look, I don't need the government check. I don't need that disability check. The only reason I'm taking it is because I have to swallow my pride and look after the best interest of my family until I get back on my feet. Once I get back on my feet, I don't intend to keep that. I make good money when I work.
Yeah.
You know,
the only reason I'm off your feet is because of them, too. That's the funny part, too. We were fine until they stepped into our lives, you know, and then all of a sudden we ended up not working and didn't have a home. And it was because they took our child, not any other reason. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous because they come up with all these. I mean, I'm not going to say a perfect life, but we were living. We were surviving on the little bit of money we were getting. But then when they start their stuff in there, and they said that the kids have to be on daycare, the kids have to be doing, they have to be in public eyes to be safety. It's like, unless you're going to pay for the daycare, unless you're going to pay for their activities, I have limits. I mean, I want my kids to have fun, but the money's not there. I'm not going to go rob a bank and make things happen. Like I told them, I said, I may be poor to you guys, but I said, I didn't have to rob a bank. I didn't have to kill anybody. I'm not dealing drugs. I'm not stealing cars. I said, I have clean records. So why are you guys making it sound like I'm a criminal? You know, they couldn't find anything. They try to go back and even try to hand my kids out to my ex-wives and see if they're giving it to them. And it's like,
I was
an easy target because at the time they were at their last they had a quota every single month, and they were running out of kids to take, and then they seen a big family like us and vulnerable, no relatives in town, you know, so we were by ourselves, and they figured that's an easy target.
But they didn't expect
somebody from the Philippines that would retaliate back to them. They thought they would say, he's not going to do anything. So
you just roll over and just take it.
They love easy targets. Yeah, they love easy targets. I got to tell you something, too, Freddie. They didn't have anything on me either. They didn't have any record. They didn't have anything they could go back on. So they invented this one, and you're going to love this one. It's because I have been in foster homes all of my life that I was not going to make this.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and then I'm like, wait a minute. You're taking my child, you're putting them in foster care, and then you're falling back on the fact that I was in foster care to make that a reason as to why I wouldn't be a good parent. What? Well, excuse me?
Yeah.
I haven't worked that out exactly. Okay. All right. So yeah, that was their final basis for me not being a good parent, was because I had spent most of my life in foster homes when I was a kid. Okay.
Well, once you're in the system, you're in the system for life. And any of these girls that come out of foster care, and a lot of them do get pregnant at 18, 19, 20 years old, and immediately, okay, boom. They're a target. Go get them. Go get them.
Well, and I don't want to knock foster care. I mean, at the end of it, I don't want to knock foster care, because I think people that are willing to take some other child into their home and provide them with, you know, food, shelter, and an actual loving family life, I give them all props for that. the problem is you still have those, again, and it stems from the media, because anytime you hear about foster care in the media, it's always because something went wrong. Now, me personally,
yeah.
I think, because I have a lot of friends that grew up that were, you know, in
foster care. I
grew up with
foster care directly across my street. I grew up with it.
And,
my personal thought
is people in foster, kids that grow up in foster care, honestly, they are the most socially adjusted kids. I mean, yeah, okay,
yeah.
There's
yeah.
like, you know, a few little, you know, occasionally some trust issues, this and that, based on the situation. But honestly, foster care, it will socially adjust you to different situations. I mean, you get to deal with other people, other adults, other kids your age growing up. And, yeah, all right, it's I understand that it's a – because I didn't have to go through it. So I know I don't want to sound like I'm better than anybody else. But I actually kind of envied some of my friends that grew up in foster care because they got to experience meeting all that big array of – people and that different diversity
for
of...
me. That's a great thing for me. I got
yeah.
a lot of my better qualities out of foster care, but then back in my day when I was a foster child, this was in the 70s, okay, that the foster care was a whole different animal back then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the whole deal was a whole different deal then. I mean, they were very careful. They were very selective of the people that they put you with, and if the situation wasn't right, they took you out of it immediately. That doesn't happen anymore. They're not picky about who they have. I attended drives for foster care parents. I mean, I've seen this since I've had my kid taken. I actually attended one on the reservation that where they were actively sitting there campaigning for foster parents. They were wanting people to come up and sign up to be foster parents. Well, they don't care about those people. They just want more people. They want more people to put these kids with because they don't have enough people to put the kids with. And
no, Arizona takes over 32 kids a day. They've got so many kids in foster care, they don't have enough foster homes, so they're living in the CPS offices.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
You cannot tell me that there are that many bad parents in Arizona. I mean, are you saying that? I mean, that's over 50,000 children a year. 50,000 children a year. Are you telling me there's 50,000 families every year that are so bad in Arizona? What the hell's going on in Arizona?
Ken, in Clayton, Iowa, 80% of the children have been taken there. I'm not joking. I hitchhiked there, and I'm not kidding you. I hitchhiked there, and I went there on a summer day in the middle of the week. I didn't see a single child on the street, Ken. 80% of the children, you're telling me that I have 30,000 people, 15,000 of which are parents, that 80% of those parents are bad parents? Come on, man. You can't even be real with that number.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm sorry.
No, we're on the same page. I'm saying there's no way that you can tell me that there are that many bad parents out there.
12,000 bad parents. Come on. Really? Okay. I'm sorry.
I think it's them manipulating the numbers to, you know, manipulate the media and whatnot and the government. I don't want to sound like a big, weird government conspiracy theorist, but
I mean, you sit back and you look at it with a rational
mind, with a rational mind and logical thought process. No, that makes absolutely no sense. I mean, it really doesn't make sense. Yeah, okay. Everybody knows somebody who, all right, you know, I got friends that got kids, and I may or may not agree or disagree with some of their parenting tactics. That doesn't make them a bad parent.
No.
And I think that's what 90% of it is all of a sudden, you know, the courts get involved, and the courts don't agree because they have a strict guideline of what it's all written out. on what you should and shouldn't do as a parent. Somehow, you know, every time you become a parent, you don't get that handbook the courts have. You don't get that beautiful handbook on how to raise a child.
Right,
because
yeah.
they don't pass that out. As
well,
a parent, you got to wing it as you're going. So then you all of a sudden, you know, you do one thing and attention's brought to you because, or you did something you felt was proper. Like, I don't know, anything from discipline to anything that you can think of. But the courts don't agree with it. Now all of a sudden you're in their eye. Now you have to go buy their book that you never got when your child was born. So, and that's the pisser of it is you're at that point, you're screwed because
well,
you don't have
that
handbook.
Well, the problem is it's very selective of who is a good parent and who isn't. Well, it's decided
right.
on this fat, greasy, uneducated, polyester-wearing social worker that gets to decide that you are a good or a bad parent. I'm sorry.
And usually just within hours, Ken. That's the best part. I think ours spent an entirety of what? I think within the time period between the time that they had taken our child until the time that they decided that they were going to be temporarily, permanently placed with someone else, they maybe spent 8 hours total in that
wow.
1 month period with us. How are you going to determine that two people are unable to take care of their children in 8 hours, in a month?
You can't.
Right.
No,
well, yeah, look, I mean, I've had several guests on here, and the social worker, as soon as they walk into the house and they see the kid, they go, oh, he's got ADHD. How do you know? First of all, I'm not buying this ADHD crap.
You have.
You know, I'm not buying that.
Every kid has ADHD.
Oh, for the love of God, every adult has it.
That's what you do.
Shut up with that crap.
I
mean, I got a kid.
Syndrome.
He's supposed to have ADHD. And it's up to the parent to teach him, you got to stay focused. But a kid, he's supposed
right.
to be that way. I mean, you exactly. don't need to put him on psychotropic drugs. Well, why do they put him on these drugs? Oh, guess what? They make more money. Everybody's making money off of this. Everybody's making money. I mean, my God, this pharmaceutical industry is a multi-trillion dollar worldwide industry. And it is controlling the planet. Everybody's on drugs. You don't need to be on drugs. My God. I mean, if you're going to be on drugs,
would you like to know the average,
Ken?
Would you like to know the average? The average person on an average day takes 3 pills. I'm not kidding you. Every person in this country, on the average, takes 3 pills a day of some sort. Now, what is up with that? What is up with that?
That is, it's wrong. I don't even like to take aspirin or headache pills.
Like
I got a headache.
I don't take it either.
I just don't take it. I don't know what's in it. I don't like taking pills. I never did as a kid. It was very difficult for my mother to get me to take a pill. I just couldn't take them. I didn't like it, and I still don't like it. But you don't need to be putting children on psychotropic drugs. But they do it because they're making money. They don't give a damn about the child's life. They care about the money that they're getting. Everybody's getting a kickback. Everybody's getting a bonus. Everybody's getting money. I mean, money is important, okay. But, you know, life is a lot more important than money. I'm just going to ahead and throw that against the wall, see if it sticks. But I'm going to stick by it. Life is a lot more important than drugs. So
I agree.
No, absolutely.
I totally
now,
agree.
Now, on that note, I have some affirmation. My wife and I have a good family friend. She's a single mother. She has a son who's 11, a daughter who's 9. The son actually just cliff notes when he was 6. Walked in, found his father overdosed on drugs, died. Since that point in time, the son, the boy, refuses to go to school. Absolutely refuses. I mean, she's not a bad mother. she kind of went through a hard time. I mean, I give her a little bit of leeway because, well, you know, her husband died. It was a terrible situation. Yet
right.
She refuses to, I don't want to say force. It's the only word I can get that I can come up with. Force her child, her son, to go to school. He
right.
disassociates himself with everybody and everything else. She's got him on a regimen of a minimum of 6 pills a day that he has to take for all this crap. Just to deal with the stress and the anxiety and blah, blah, blah. She comes over here, over to my house. She'll leave both her kids here. I don't give them any medication, nothing to help them sleep, nothing like that. It's straight, you know what, go play outside, do what you got to do, socialize. I'll have other friends come over with their kids. They all play. He has absolutely no issues until she shows up again. Then all of a sudden he wants his meds. He's been, it's almost like Pavlov's dog. She's like the catalyst of it because, well, I mean, she's very naive. So she's just kind of going by what everybody's telling her, this and that. And she's been dealing with the courts. They're threatening to take her kids, this and that. So she's jumping through the hoops and she's doing exactly what they're saying. And I keep looking at her going, stop giving him medication. Let him be a kid. Socialize him. Every time he's at my house, kid's right as rain. Absolutely right as rain. I mean, you, me, anybody else on the phone can have a conversation with this kid. He's very mature. He can talk to you. I mean, yeah, granted, you got to dumb things down a little bit for him. But at the end of the day, no, he'll go out, he'll play. He just wants to have fun. He leaves here.
No,
it's all medication, this and that. And I don't get that. I can't wrap my brain around it.
I can't either, other than, you know, people just want to make money and they can care less whether it's in the best interest of the child. Now, Freddie, did they do that to your children at all? Did they put them on any kind of drugs? Freddie? Did we lose Freddie? We couldn't have lost Freddie. I still got him connected. Freddie. He's still connected. We can't hear him.
Well, he might have thought he had time to run to the restroom or something. I mean, we were kind of talking him out of it, you know. I mean, come on.
Right.
I don't want to sound rude or nothing, but who else is on the phone, Cap?
Freddie Rizzozo. We've got Christopher Bruce, the living man. And we've got you, Doc. Freddie, are you there?
Yeah, Freddie. I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, there we are.
Okay. I'm sorry. We got a little sidetracked, but
no, that's all right. That's all right.
Did they ever give your children in foster care? Did they have any of them on any kind of drugs at all? Do you know of anyway?
I'd say they've gone through several appointments that I was not invited for some odd reason.
Right.
And here's the thing is that 5 months before they had taken his children, we had gotten the shots, which, you know, we really had to take it, but we did it just so they can go to school because that's what the school was requiring. To make the story short, we gotten their shot, so they told us we were so far behind on our shots that they couldn't find no records. And I gave them a copy of that. So what happens when they took them? They had to get them shots caught up. And you know what happens when you take 2 shots the same
in
1 year? any doctor, it doesn't take a scientist to figure that out. So.
Right.
No,
that happens with animals too. That the same thing applies to animals. If they try and tell you that you didn't get your shots, but we gave them their shots anyway, just to make sure that they got their shots, this is not a good thing, folks. This is not a good thing for kids or for animals.
Well, look, there is a direct link. I mean, I think the numbers are out there. There is a direct link with the problem is maybe the vaccines may not be that bad, but when you're giving too many vaccines too quickly, look at the numbers. I mean, we have 1 in 10 children with autism.
Oh, no. Ken, I'm going to scare you with that one. No, I'm afraid we're down to 1 in 5 now, buddy.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me a bit.
And it's going to be worse.
I'm not going to argue that.
It's going to be 1 in 2. They say it's going to be 1 in 2 in less than 10 years.
And I'd like to know why they're giving chickenpox vaccines. Now, I remember when I was a kid, I mean, I never went to it, but I remember there were chickenpox parties. We always got chickenpox as kids. And they would give chickenpox parties.
Two of them.
Well, you know, the thing about chickenpox is if you get it, it builds up your immunity naturally. Now, if you take the vaccine, that doesn't mean that you're not going to get chickenpox. It just means
that's
it's going to keep you from getting it sooner. But it doesn't mean that you're not going to get it. Your immune system is going to be weakened. You need to develop your immune system naturally so it's stronger. Now, I mean, these kids not only are they, today are they not only cupcakes and lollipops, but I mean, now, I mean, they're just immune to just about anything. We have weakened our society. We've weakened our human race over money.
Oh, yeah.
You want to hear something funny, Ken? I haven't had the flu since I was 15 years old. I haven't had a single flu shot. Now, explain that one.
I don't get the flu shot either. When I was in the Navy, they gave us the actual flu every time.
Every time I get the flu shot, I get sick.
Right. You know, when we were out to sea, the first thing they did is they gave us a goddamn flu shot, and we had 365 guys on our ship all sick. We were all sick.
Yep.
We got the actual flu. And,
You
know, okay, it's supposed to build up your immunity, which I think it did because I never really got the flu until I got the flu shot. I mean, I get sick as a kid, but I mean, I get pneumonia all the time. And that, let me tell you, pneumonia, that's a butt whooper. Let me tell you, trust me on that one. I've been hospitalized 3 times for 9 days straight. And pneumonia is a killer. But the flu, you don't need the flu shot. I'm sorry. You know, you got to build up your immunity naturally. You got to get, sometimes it pays to get sick so you don't get sick. It's okay.
Here's something funny too, Ken. Isn't it funny how I've never heard of shingles until a couple of years ago? Feeling that they invented this flu or this shingles vaccine just so they could make more money.
Well, evidently, if you get chickenpox, automatically you get the shingles virus is in your body. So it's,
That's how that works.
They brought out the vaccine. I've never even heard of it.
And there hadn't been a vaccine for it, you know, until, like you said, you know, a good 5-6 years ago. But what it is as a child, you get chickenpox. I mean, that's what we call it. That's what everybody calls it when you're a child. When you're an adult and you end up with that, it's no longer chickenpox, it's shingles. And the downside is once you get it when you're an adult, it's actually more contagious. It's more contagious, and it really can kill you because it doesn't just fester on your skin. It actually goes into your organs and this and that if you let it go.
I remember a good friend of mine he got chickenpox. And see, get chickenpox as a kid, you're going to be sick, but it can't hurt you. But as an adult, it can really affect you really, really bad. He was 20 years old. He was a good friend of mine. We all went, you know, to school with each other. We were in college. He got it. He was out. I mean, he was out for like 2 or 3 months. He had to drop out of school for a trimester in college because of it. He was sick. He almost died from this crap. And I said, how did you not get chickenpox as a kid? And he says, well, I never got it. And he says, well, I got it now. And no, he was sick. So
yeah, no, it's crazy. And that's the thing. I mean, like you were saying, Cap, they used to do those, like, you know, chickenpox parties. Even like measles or mumps, they do the same thing. You bring all the neighborhood kids over, you expose them to it, everybody's going to
get it. Then you don't get it again.
Sick and whatever. Right. But the problem with chickenpox, again, it turns into, because you already have that virus in you, yeah, you have the antibodies for the chickenpox. I mean, medically, this is the way this works. You have the antibodies for the chickenpox, but then all of a sudden, you know, as an adult, as you get older, no, you're more susceptible at that point. Once you've had chickenpox, you're more susceptible to end up with shingles because you already have the virus in you.
Yeah, but I mean, how many people really get shingles? We've all had chickenpox. How many people really get shingles?
Yeah, it's not a big widespread thing. I used to work in dialysis, you know, for kidney patients. And we'd get at least once a month one or two patients that would end up with shingles, and we'd have to put them in isolation, keep them away from everybody else because they've already got a compromised immune system, and that's how serious shingles can be. I ended up with shingles, I don't know, 3 years ago, and it sucked. I was in the hospital at least every other day. Because I couldn't breathe or, you know.
I don't even know what it is. I thought shingles was something that you put on your roof. I mean, I don't even know what the hell it is.
I wish that's all it was.
Ken, I gotta run, buddy. I gotta run, Ken. But
okay,
thank
you, Christopher, the living man. We've only got about 7 minutes. We've got a 90-minute show here tonight. So thank you, Christopher. You're always a great guest, and you're always welcome aboard this program.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Ken. Have a good night.
Keep fighting.
Okay?
Keep fighting, Christopher. Keep fighting.
I will.
He's a fighter. He's a fighter. He's a fighter. And so are you, Freddie. And, you know, we've only got about 7 minutes, but Freddie, when I heard the news, when Terry sent me this news, I can't tell you how great I felt, because at the time, with all of this crap that's been going on in the country over the past week, I've been really bummed. I really have been. And I went into Target just the other day. My friends that I live with here, I live upstairs, I live downstairs, and he drove me because I needed a new inner tube for my bike. I didn't have my inner tube on my bike blew up, so I needed a new one. So we went out, and we got a new one. And we're in Target, and this was right after what had happened in Charlottesville. And you could just feel it. It was almost – I was living in New York when 9/11 happened, and you could feel everybody was – no one was really talking. No one was laughing. No, everybody was very somber. Well, in Target, I mean, not only were the customers, but the people that worked there, it just had that feeling that people were like – this is not who we are. I'm almost embarrassed. You know, it was almost, you know, people were embarrassed. And, you know, it's very sad. But when I got the news that you got your kids back, because, look, Freddie, you've been on this program, almost 3 years. It was roughly shortly after, you know, that you got your kids taken. And I remember everybody that comes on my show.
Yeah.
And I still keep in contact with a lot of them. Because you know, you have to. And you know, Fred, you've called on this program before, and Doc, you have. And but when I got the news that you got your kids back, I was just so pumped and so excited. It was such a relief to finally hear some good news. And now the Rembus family,
stories,
they've been on they've been on my show before, and I got to write them. I just got their news today earlier. So I got to write them and, you know, and thank them. And I really got to thank you, Freddie, for, you know, your resolve, your fights, you're able to keep your composure. I know I sound like a broken record, but I got to tip my hat to you, Freddie. I mean, you are a guy, you fought the right fight. You fought it good. You fought it right. And I just really wish the very best for you and your entire family. And you're right, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a long, long process. But you do have a lot of faith in you. You do believe in God. You are a hard worker. So I don't think there's going to be some problems, but I think you're going to resolve them. That's just my opinion. And I wish
I agree. Freddie, I don't know you as well as Cap does. But I just have to say, I do appreciate the fact that you're not bitter. I mean, honestly, you're not bitter. You're not an angry person. So I think that's, I would too. I'd be the most bitter person ever.
I had my chance, but I wanted to be really angry and show him how angry I was. But there's a part of me that was just saying, just calm yourself. I got this, and just believe in me, and I will handle this. Trust in me. I will handle this. So that's the only thing that I had my fate set on. And for me to be bitter and then have him go and end up in jail, it ain't gonna do my kids any good. I could have easily just done the opposite and just go and just end my whole life. But then I don't want my kids to live the rest of their life saying that it's their fault, that the reason why I did it. So I had to do a lot of thinking, and it was really a tough decision. I mean, it wasn't really a tough decision, but it was really tough for me to keep myself calm, you know. So I appreciate all those kind words.
I can only imagine. And honestly, you know, listening to you talk and your demeanor, it actually gives me a little bit more faith in humanity. I'm a very cynical person. I don't have a lot of trust in you know, anybody for the most part. I mean, I'm not going to lie. There's very few people I trust. But listening to you talk, it does give me faith in humanity that there really are some good people out there. So I just want to thank you. Cap, I want to thank you for, you know, having him on, because without him on, I never would have had this, I don't know, I don't want to say renowned faith, but I do appreciate that. Getting that out, it's phenomenal.
If you need somebody to talk to, just look me up on Facebook. I mean, we'll sit there and chat. I'm here. I'm not here just for, you know, now that my battle is somewhat over with. I'm also going to do something. I've actually got a book coming out and a documentary coming out here soon, hopefully. I want to be, you know, that was very kind of you to say that. I never even looked at it that way. I've had a lot of people say, how can you be stay strong for this long? I would have lost it. I've gone drinking. I've gone everything. But you got to stop and think about it. If you do the way you want to live your life, not according to him, then, you know, you're going to go in the wrong direction. And I'm glad that I followed what he said to me. But I'm not going to lie. It was really tough because there was part of me that just wanted to go ramble on them and just really just take it out on them. But then if I would have ended up in prison, then my children would have been definitely be adopted, and that wouldn't have done them any good.
Exactly.
I made a promise, and I kept my promise.
Good.
Here's who I really got to thank for all of this. And I got to thank my good friend, Terry LaPointe, who is an incredible writer. And if it wasn't for Terry LaPointe, first of all, Freddie, I'd have never known who the hell you were. If it wasn't for Terry LaPointe going out there and doing her job with Health Impact News, I would have never known who Freddie Frazoza was. We'd have never met. So I'm sorry, but I gotta give a big bunch of thanks.
I completely agree with you, because if it wasn't for Terry, the Seven Angels would have never been, you know, known. I mean, when Terry,
and you were known internationally,
not just
America. You were known internationally.
No, all the way from the Philippines to Russia. So,
yeah.
I mean, I've got people following me from Switzerland to the UK and rooting for us. So, I mean, I thank everybody from wherever. Whoever and wherever they have from, I mean, I've had a lot more support than that. So I really think, like you said, Captain, it's Terry that really made this whole thing happen. And Terry has been, she's like a part of this family, because if it wasn't for her giving out the story, and then she just did an update, and she did a tremendous job. And that woman's just such a, you know, an amazing woman.
No,
I had the privilege of meeting her. She is such a wonderful woman.
She is a very incredible
human
being.
If you ever want to tip your hats out, it's going to be for her, not for me. It's for her.
Right.
You
well,
know, so.
You know, I really want to thank her. We are running out of time. Again, Freddie, love you. You're always welcome on this show. You do call from time
yes,
to time.
Thank
and,
you.
Doc, you know I love you. You're always welcome. Anybody,
I love
you. Welcome.
I'll say the same way with you.
You know, anybody's welcome on this show. But I'm going to leave here tonight with this song. Now, I remember this song when I was a little kid. And, you know, there are certain songs that are timeless. They always
right.
have, you know, they're always going to mean the same thing, whether it's 2,000 years ago or whether it's now or 2,000 years away from now. They're always going to mean the same thing. And what is going on in the world here today, I think this is a very, very appropriate song. This song is called One Tin Soldier. I want to thank everybody that was listening in the chat room, everybody that's listening on their smartphones, and all of those that do listen into archive. We do get a lot of you. So I really want to thank you. Again, thank you, Freddie. Thank you, Doc. And we will see you back here tomorrow night at 8 p.m. We do have a sports show. Now, I know it's crazy, but on Fridays, we forget about all the evil in the world, and we talk about things that really matter. And that's sports.
Right.
And you got to talk about things that you do like, and you got to talk about things that you don't like. And if all you're going to do is talk about things that you don't like, you're never going to talk about the things that you do like, and you're going to lose focus. And you can't lose focus. Life is too short to lose focus. It's okay to like things. And once in a while, it's okay to have a little fun. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Goodbye, everybody.
Our brothers, we will share all the